You know what's on everyone's wish list this year?
Oh, definitely the Bartesian Cocktail Maker.
It's like having a bartender who never judges your drink order.
Exactly. Just pop in a capsule, press a button, boom. Old fashioned, margarita, espresso martini.
Over 60 bar quality cocktails. Zero effort.
And right now, you can save up to $150 on Bartesian Cocktail Makers.
Wait, 150?
Yep, up to $150 off. It's the best deal of the season.
Okay, but seriously, how did we ever host before Bartesian?
Last time your kitchen looked like a crime scene. Sticky counters, fruit wedges everywhere.
Yeah, this year, no measuring tools, no mess, just perfect cocktails.
This year, I'm gifting one to my brother.
And myself, for research purposes.
Make the holidays easier and happier with Bartesian. Mix over 60 premium cocktails at the touch of a button. Save up to $150 on Bartesian cocktail makers. But hurry, this Black Friday and Cyber Monday offer ends December 2nd. Get yours now at bartesian.com/drinks. That's bartesian.com/drinks.
Life gets messy. Spills, stains, and kid chaos. But with Anabay, cleaning up is easy. Our sofas are fully machine washable, inside and out, so you never have to stress about messes again. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, that means fewer stains and more peace of mind. Designed for real life, our sofas feature changeable fabric covers, allowing you to refresh your style anytime. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa effortlessly. Perfect for cozy apartments or spacious homes. Plus, they're earth-friendly and built to last. That's why over 200,000 happy customers have made the switch. Get early access to Black Friday pricing right now. Sofas start at just $699. Visit washablesofas.com now and bring home a sofa made for life. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
This podcast is brought to you by Purposefully Different Productions and is proudly sponsored by Little Dish, makers of delicious fresh meals for kids that are an absolute lifesaver on busy days. I love these meals because they are different to other kids' meals out there. They include a variety of ingredients, lots of textures, and are made with little taste buds in mind. Before we get started on today's episode, here's a word from our friend Giovanna Fletcher.
At Little Dish, we've spent years perfecting delicious, healthy, fresh meals guaranteed to be eaten by kids. Except when you sprinkle cheese on top instead of letting them do it, or if the Little Dish is served on the red plate or the yellow plate or the blue plate, or when you talk over them, or when they can't wear their Ranger antlers because it's summer and they're in the loft, or on Mondays or on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and potentially even Sundays. Good luck and Godspeed. Little Dish. Healthy food kids love. Find us in the chilled aisle.
Hello and welcome back to How to Feed with me, Charlotte Sterling Reed, the parenting podcast that brings you reassurance, confidence and practical advice on feeding your baby, toddler and your whole family. Today I'm joined by clinical psychologist, best-selling author and a great friend of mine, Dr. Marta. Dr. Marta is a registered practitioner with over 20 years of clinical and academic experience. She is also a mother of two. And her mission is to make the science of psychology accessible to all and to support parents to see their child beneath their behaviour. Thank you so much for joining me today, Marta. So the first thing I wanted to speak about is a bit more general than going into like the psychology around nutrition and food, which is parenting is hard. It's really hard. I struggle. I share really honestly how I found parenting really difficult. And I think I wanted to ask you, like, why do you think that is? Why do we find parenting hard these days specifically?
Yeah. I mean, I think parenting's always been hard. Mm-hmm. I think I remember my mum telling me how hard it was to be my mother. So I think parenting's always been hard. Mm. I think now we're much more open about talking about it. So you might hear the hard bits a bit more. I think now we have more information out there. Like there's so much knowledge, actually sometimes a bit too much. Mm-hmm. And I think parents struggle to navigate everything that's out there. I think in my... You know, we talk about a village. I would say my mum didn't have a village. You know, we moved to a different country when I was little. My mum had no friends. Mm. She had my grandma who was very much supporting her. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a privilege. Not everybody's got a mum or a lovely neighbour or, you know, that idea of like, oh, we used to grow up with a village. I'm like, well, I didn't. Mm-hmm. But maybe other people did. But I think that idea of support feels harder for some people, especially in a big city, which is weird because we're surrounded by people. Mm. But I think often people don't build those kind of strong connections. People move, like my mum, you know, she moved to a different country. People move away from where they were brought up. So I think it feels like we're less supported as parents. And I also think as a society, we're moving to a much faster pace. So we're supposed to be doing more. I think we get that sense of you have to achieve. And I think that was inbuilt, you know, a long time ago. You know, like I grew up with a sense of needing to achieve, you know.
Same.
Like this conversation could go like a detour, but I think that sense of achievement sticks when you become a parent, and therefore you're juggling work, you're juggling your kids. You want to feel like you're achieving, you want to achieve like you're doing it right. So it just feels heavy, and I don't think we're very well supported as parents. I think our society doesn't value parenting, doesn't value children or childhood. I think society wants our kids to grow up faster. I think it's really challenging for, you know, all those layers, lack of support, lack of resources, lack of value.
I actually think it's a relief to hear you say that, because, you know, I did genuinely feel all of that. And it is exactly as you say, it's the lack of support, and it's this need to like be doing the best and achieving. And it's almost, it is this goal, you're trying to reach perfection.
Yeah.
You're trying to be a perfect parent, a perfect working mother, a perfect, you know,
partner.
Housewife, partner,
yes,
friend,
yes.
Everything.
All
and it's so exhausting. Do you think social media is a positive or negative for that? Because obviously you talk about the village. Like obviously you can absolutely find that on social media and online. But obviously,
so
there
I think
are
it can
too.
Go both ways. I've met mothers who feel really stressed out by social media, you know, like they follow all the parenting accounts and they're all saying similar, but sometimes confusing messages. And often if that's you, I would say, shut that down. Like, let it go, drop it, just focus on you. Just, you know, really tune into yourself and what you want to do as a mum, who you want to be as a mum. I think I also know the other experience from my personal point of view, which is I became a mum much later than most of my friends. And so I didn't have, you know, their kids were in a totally different life stage from me with a tiny baby. And I actually found my support group on social media. Even though I wasn't on it, that's when I started going on it, looking at it. And I found parenting pages that gave me a lot of support. Yours was one of them.
Once upon a time.
No, but it's true. And I was like, I don't know these people, but I feel supported. And so I think it just depends who you are. Like for me, it was fine. And I was very selective because I am very selective. And again, now
one should be really.
I don't follow tons of parenting accounts. Like I actually don't really follow very many. I follow the people that I really like and that's it. No one else is there. I don't, you know, I just don't look at it. I just do me. And I think that's really important. Like you need to figure out and be really discerning about who you follow and why and how it makes you feel, which is something I talk about a lot. When you go on social media, you should really stop and reflect about how your body feels afterwards. If it's not feeling good,
that's a good point.
You need to stop. Don't just keep repeating the same behavior, because it's not going to make you feel better.
That's such a good point. And I totally agree as well. I learned so much from following your page. And I am quite selective with what I listen to. And I think one thing that parents can definitely take is you don't have to take what somebody says, even if it's you or I, as absolute gospel. You know, take the bits of the advice that work for you and discard the bits that don't.
Absolutely.
But I mean, I learned so much from following you as well. And actually that brings me on to wanting to talk a little bit about, I think you're going to love talking about this, gentle parenting.
Okay.
Discuss.
you know, gosh, it's a minefield.
Yeah.
I think the thing I want people to understand about gentle parenting is it's not a model. It's a framework. It's a way of thinking about children, right? We have no actual science about gentle parenting works or doesn't work. We have lots of science on what we call authoritative parenting, but that is such a mouthful, right? And people get very confused. But it's not authoritarian, which is do as you're told. And it's not permissive, which is, you know, just get on with it. You'll be fine, you know, which often also comes from that sense of if I set a boundary, I'm being mean to my child, or I'm not giving them a sense of autonomy. And there is a middle ground, which is authoritative, which is about firm boundaries, but you set them with love. And you need to, when you're authoritative, you also need to just understand that as a parent, you always have power over your child. It's a fact. You are more powerful. You have more knowledge.
You know more, yeah.
Even when I say things like, let your child lead, I'm saying, yes, let your child lead. But at some point, you know, you pull them back if what they're doing is unsafe. Mm-hmm. You don't let your child lead you down the street and then cross the road without, you know, checking for cars because that's what your kid wants to do. It's the same in every other aspect of parenting. And I think gentle parenting has had a really bad rep because it pulls more towards permissive. Mm-hmm. And I get lots of people say to me, you're not a gentle parent. And my response is, I'm not. I'm not a gentle parent. I'm also not gentle all the time. If you're thinking about gentle being like, I let you do what you want, that's not me. I'm actually very firm. I have very strict boundaries in my house, but I like to think that my kids feel loved all the time. And yeah, sometimes I get it wrong and I'm shouty sometimes and I get angry sometimes because I'm human the whole way. So I think if some of the themes around gentle parenting fit for you, a bit like you were saying before, hold on to them.
Yeah.
You know, I like the ideas around respect your kids. Mm-hmm. If you want to teach respect, it comes with respecting them first, for example. So I respect my kids as being kids. I'm not somebody who will be like, you do as you're told because I tell you so.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or I'm because threatening I said so. You.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not their boss. I'm their parent. Mm. And I see myself as their guide, their teacher, their helper.
Yeah.
And sometimes I lose it because it's hard to hold that all the time.
Yes, absolutely.
But I think, you know, the term to me is not that important. It's about finding your way through as a parent. Mm. And I like to give parents what I call confidence, which is like, I trust myself in making the right choices for my kid, despite what all the voices tell me. Mm. I've had parents say to me, you shouldn't say no to your child. And I'm like, oh, don't be ridiculous.
Yes.
Feel free to say no to your child.
Yeah.
But I try with my toddler to say no less because no means stop.
Like, yeah.
For me, it's a danger signal. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you will end up saying no like
all
200
time.
Times a day.
Yeah, so true. Yeah.
So I try and tell her what to do when it's not safe. Like she's jumping on the sofa, which happens all the time at the moment. So I just go, you can jump on the floor.
Yeah.
Rather than saying no, which she'll just ignore, I try and tell her what to do because I know that will work better at this age. But of course, I say no to my kids. Well, can I have this toy? No. Very easy. And I'm not like, oh my God, I'm doing something terrible. I'm like, your kids are going to hear the word no from other people when they grow up too, their boss, you know, an interview, all sorts. Like, there's nothing wrong with it. So I think go carefully with the label.
Yes.
And instead just think, what makes sense for me? How can I use this with my family? You know,
and also it's different personalities. Like your personality as a parent, but also your child's personality.
Yes.
You know, you've got to take all of that into account. So there isn't a one size fits all. And I think so much of what you just said there really relates to obviously the way that I recommend with food as well. So you talk about the authoritative approach, and that is actually, there's lots of elements of that that are also incredibly beneficial in when you were teaching your child about eating and food and nutrition and feeding. Can you talk a little bit about that? How, because I had said about, you know, principles of gentle parenting around food, but I think it's so much more relevant to the authoritative side of how we parent. And I think that it matters so, like, so many of the elements that you just talked about there, like having respect, letting them lead, but also being able to have boundaries. It's all exactly the same when it comes to how we feed our child. So, yeah, can you talk to that a little bit?
So, I mean, I try and keep it really simple because I think it's complex, but you can make it simple so everybody can follow it if you want.
Yeah.
We know, there's tons of science on this, that one of the best ways around feeding is to follow some very simple rules, right? And I think of them as jobs. I have a job and my child has a job and they're different. Mm-hmm. My job is to choose what they eat and when they eat it. Mm-hmm. And my child's job is to choose how much of what I serve they have. Mm-hmm. That's it. Like, very simple. But I think when it comes to the authoritative bit, it's also about language. It's about how you present the food. It's about the boundaries you set around the table. And these might shift, not just depending on your child's age, because I've got a 2-year-old and a 6-year-old, and the boundaries are so different. Mm. But we still have the overall same boundary around our table, but the way that they behave around the boundary, so their behavior is different. Mm. So I can't expect my 2-year-old, for example, to sit at the table through the entirety of the meal. Mm-hmm. And I remember my 6-year-old being the same.
Yeah.
She can't do it. Mm. So she'll eat and then she gets up. Mm. And the way that we treat it is you're allowed to get up and play nearby. Mm. She often has something to draw, something to play, not at the table, but nearby, yeah. so I can keep an eye on her. But we tell her, if you want to come back, your food is here. Mm-hmm. Once we're finished, the food goes. Mm. In her words at the moment, she's learning to speak is, I'm coming.
Ah.
It's very cute. She goes, I'm coming. She goes, she gets off her chair and she says, I'm coming. And that tells me she wants more.
Yeah. Okay.
But she's having a break.
Yeah.
And actually for 2-year-olds, it's nice for their tummies to have a break, to settle the food, to think, do I want more? Mm. And they can't do it at the table. As much as it would be much better if she just sat there and settled and then went, oh, I'll pick a bit more. She can't because she's a 2-year-old.
Because she's two. And her brain is firing. She needs more. She needs new things. She needs to learn. Yeah.
And she needs to move. Like movement helps. And she always comes back and have a little more. More and more often, she finishes everything I've served her, which is in a
She's getting older,
But she is getting off the table and coming back. And sometimes she'll say more and we'll give her a little bit more. Mm-hmm. My 6-year-old now just sits. Mm. She sits the whole meal. She chats to us. And I'm like, wow, this is so different.
Yeah.
But we do the same thing. And often we still haven't finished. Like me and my husband often are the ones who are at the table for longer. We've got bigger stomachs, bigger food. We chat more. You know, my 6-year-old literally like will sit down, but she will sit and chat to us for a bit. My 2-year-old can't do that. Mm. Like, so I think it's about those boundaries, how you set them, and then how, you know, the kind of bit where you allow your child to lead is about how much they eat and then how they fit around that boundary. So there is a bit of flexibility. Yeah. It's not about forcing them to sit on their chair.
Yeah, for sure. And I think as well that kind of like what you talked about in terms of respect, like we respect that their appetite, but we also respect their desires. Like they don't ever have to eat something if they don't want to eat it. And like you say, if they want to get down, we're respecting them as an individual having their own choice. That doesn't mean they can do whatever they want. That doesn't mean they take the food and they go and run away and smear it all over the walls. Like that doesn't mean that.
No.
It means that we can respect that they don't want to eat that right now. Mm-hmm. They don't want to finish that right now. Mm-hmm. So I think that is what we're talking about here. It's boundaries within a framework, allowing them to lead their own journey and make their own decisions, but within a specific boundary. And on this note, I think what I'd love to talk about a little bit about is language, because this is something that you talk about really well. And we've actually talked about this before together. I think we've got a blog on food language around the mealtimes. It actually is really good, and it's something I refer to time and time again, because I think language around mealtimes is really hard. And we probably grew up in an environment where we were being told, you must finish what's on your plate. Mm-hmm. You eat this bit of food. Mm-hmm. We don't waste food, which I'm not saying that those, you know, didn't have their place. But the way we talk about food now is definitely like we want it to change, right? And also we don't want to talk about you shouldn't eat this. This food is really bad for you. And this is all stuff that's so ingrained in society. So I'd love to get your thoughts on the language around the food that we use.
Yeah, language really matters. To me, words are really powerful and we should be more mindful about the words that we use in everyday, but particularly with our children. I know this is hard. It can be like, it's like a little shift, but it can be such a powerful one. Mm. And I think one of the things about language in terms of psychology is that that's how we construct meaning as adults, as humans, right? We create meaning through the words that we use and in relationship with others. So the way that we talk about food creates the meaning that kids get from what they're eating or what mealtime is like or what eating a different food might be like. And I think it's really important to think about the words that we use and whether and how they might construct an identity for our child. Mm. So things like you're a fussy eater.
Yeah.
Right?
That
creates a label. Mm. Yeah. Really trying to avoid labeling our kids as much as possible. Or they don't really like vegetables. Mm. You know, labels. Yeah. You don't know that. Like you might feel like your kid is fussy right now, but that is today, tomorrow, maybe yesterday, but it changes over time. And if you don't allow that because you're already labeling your kid just thinks I'm a fussy eater. I'm not good at eating vegetables. Mm. I'm not good at trying new foods because that's what I'm being told. And we do, like, especially children, they do like absorb those labels and they become part of who they are.
What we say they are.
But also as families, they become stories, right? Mm. Oh, you were such a fussy eater growing up. Like, that's in my husband's family. Like, there are so many labels like that, stories like that. And they follow people around.
Yes, completely.
And then it's really hard to break away from them. Mm. So that's one thing for me with words. Yep. Really be mindful about
labeling
the labels that you add, but also to foods. You know, how do you label certain food when you're eating it? Like, oh, it's yucky. Mm. Like, that's not a descriptive term. That's laden with emotion.
And that's an opinion as well. Yeah.
Yes. It's subjective. Like, what I find yucky, you might find absolutely delicious.
Yeah.
So, you know, actually moving away from that and creating a different narrative around food that might sound more like, I'm still learning to like X. And we're all learning to like things. Mm. I haven't yet found an adult who's not still learning to like something. Or, you know, with our kids, instead of being like, you're a fussy eater, just being like, oh, okay, you haven't got used to this food yet. That's okay. We'll try it a different way next time, or in a, you know, a different texture, in a different shape, in a different form. I think it's so important that we think about those words, not just with our kids, but when we use them on ourselves. Mm. And then when we talk about our kids and food around others, you know, for example, parties.
Yeah.
Don't know if this happens to you, but at the moment, my daughter is like, you know, all the parties are happening.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I remember it's that so age.
Much.
It is.
But then they, so you know, all the parents are like, what does your child not eat? Mm. And unless they have an allergy, I'm like, my daughter eats everything. That is a thing my daughter has heard me say all the time. Mm. I say, my daughter eats everything. Mm. And I don't say anything else. Because I know, and my daughter knows, that when she goes to the party, if she doesn't like it, she just will choose not to eat it.
Yeah.
And I never force her to try it. Yeah. I never have. I've always said, put down the food on the table and said, you know, this is dinner. And if she goes, oh, I don't want this, I'll go, that's okay.
Yeah.
You don't have to eat it. Mm. Like, that's a recurrent theme. And it's the same at parties. Mm. It's happened before. She doesn't want the fries. She doesn't like them. Like, fries. Who doesn't eat fries? But it's happened before where she's like, I don't fancy them. I'm like, that's okay. Mm. You don't have to eat it. Mm. And I think just layering the whole, it's okay today to not want something. Mm. And it's okay tomorrow to change your mind or to try it is so important. I also think with language, we can overpraise around food. Mm. And that can really create, like, problems going down the line. Like, the same way that you don't praise your child eating, you know, a breadstick, don't praise them if they eat broccoli, because you're actually making that food some kind of special thing that, oh, I should get a celebration. I should get a reward for eating this thing. Food is food.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
you shouldn't be praising any point, any part of what your kid eats. Mm. Food is just food and you should just be enjoying it together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love that, because I always try and use the language around mealtimes, because parents often want to say, oh, you know, well done, or you ate so much of that. And I think that's really ingrained and it's quite hard to step away from. But I always try and encourage parents to say, like, I really enjoyed that mealtime together. Thank you for being a part of that mealtime with me.
That's
I really
lovely.
Enjoyed that time together, rather than it being this focus on like how much you've just eaten.
Yes.
Because then, like you say, it becomes a praise for them eating a certain amount, and then they might have the expectation that, well, my mum's really happy when I finish my plate,
it's
and they
pressure.
Start eating for you, not them, you know. So completely,
praise is a form of pressure, and we need to remember that all the time, and especially around meal times, you know, pressure can stop our stomachs from allowing food in, because they just cramp up, because that's what stress does to our bodies. It tenses up our stomach, and little ones have little stomachs. Mm. So if it tenses up, it stops them from eating. Yeah.
So if mealtimes are stressful, appetite's gone down, it's totally expected.
Yes.
But how do you take that from like a psychological perspective? How can you change the way that we do use that praise? Because I think food is so, you know, fraught with emotion, you know, the party food, the chocolates brought out on special occasions or when we're feeling not very good as a reward and as a treat. And I think this is, I always try and stay away from using the language of treat when it comes to food. Because for me, I enjoy food and it's occasion dependent. Like right now, I don't fancy some chocolate. But right now I would quite love, I don't know, a smoothie, or maybe it's a macaroni and cheese, or, you know, so I feel like food is so loaded with emotion. How do we slightly take that away but still allow kids to enjoy food and stop the whole praising for eating certain things?
I think for me, it's really hard, especially, I mean, I was brought up with treats. I was rewarded for achievements. Mm. I still have with food, you know, like food in Spanish. Well, I'm multicultural, but, you know, Spanish culture is a big part of my culture. We, you know, food is love in my family. Like my mum will get offended if I don't have seconds, you know, like, did you not like it? I'm like, I've eaten an entire bowl. What do you mean I did? But if I'm not having seconds, does that mean, you know, she takes personal offense on that. You know, like, it's not, did you not like it? It's, did you not like me? Do you not like me anymore? Do you know the hours I spent, like, over the pot, putting this together? And I think one of the things, it's hard to move away from that. But it's little by little. I always think with parents, if this is new to you, do something small. Like for me, it might be the whole, you don't have to eat it, and learn that how much your kid eats is not a sign of how worthy you are a parent, or how well you've cooked a meal, or it's none of that.
It's so true.
It's just food.
Yeah. And it's also just them. Like, how do we know how what their appetite feels. Is saying right now?
Exactly.
Like, we have different appetites day to day. It might be dependent on what we ate yesterday, what the weather is like, you know, how we're feeling, if we've got toothache. And children can't articulate that. They can't say, I really don't fancy that today, Mom. I had something similar at school yesterday. I really don't fancy it. They can't say that to us, but they can say, oh, I don't want this. And we then take that as offense. Well, you liked it yesterday. Well, I just spent 3 hours making this video. You know, it's really hard to do that. And I think that's probably really common.
It is really common. So I would start there, like, take the personal bit from food out. And when you hear it, just remind yourself, it's not about me or my cooking. My kid's not hungry today. Like, that's the kind of talk that I have in my head with my kids. And it's really helped me over time to kind of depersonalize it. I think when it comes to, like, foods that we would consider treats, chocolates, I don't know, puddings, all that kind of stuff. The way I have with both of mine, and it works because neither they're not neurodivergent, is I've just served it together. And, you know, I always used to serve a bit of fruit on their, you know, the toddler weaning plate, so they'd have, but it was all kind of mixed together. And I mean, the amount of times that they pick up the grape and they dump it in hummus and eat it. And you think, what are they doing? But I love that because they're like, it's just a food.
Exploring. Exactly.
It's just exploration. So because I think, I don't know if it's true, but I think because I've done that and I've never qualified the chocolates, the puddings as like, we get dessert today. How exciting.
Special, exactly.
It's not special. And the other thing I do is I randomize it. And I mean this, I still do it. I think it works for my head because it's the way that works for me, but find your way. Is it's not like we do puddings on weekends.
Yeah.
We just do puddings at any point.
Yeah, sporadic.
At random time of the week, I might be like, ooh, I made banana bread. Who, yes, who wants a yogurt? But the way I think about it is it's part of the meal.
Yeah.
So for example, I made lentil soup yesterday and it's one of my husband's and mine favorite. It's so delicious. And it's got spinach and it's got tomatoes. It's got all sorts of things. And I realized that my two-year-old probably hasn't had it for like, because it's like very wintery
comfort.
Yeah,
it's not familiar right now.
I'm like, oh, this is not familiar for her.
Yeah.
But, and I was like, oh, I wonder how my six-year-old will take it. My six-year-old lapped it up, literally licked her plate clean. Like watching her eat ladles of it was really great for me. And I, you know, what I've just said, like, it does fill you up. You can't help it.
You can't help it.
And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. And my two-year-old was like, no, thank you. So we ended up, because it had bread, but instead of just giving her bread, I cut it up and I put it in the soup. So it had a bit of the lentils and the goodness. And then I put it on a little plate and she ate that. But as part of that, I knew that she might not eat very much. So as part of my menu already.
Exactly. You've already planned it.
I planned it. I planned to give them a yogurt with a bit of fruit at the end. So she had. So I knew her tummy would be full. So I think as a parent, you need to plan these things. Today's dinner is
different. If it's something new and unexpected and they're not familiar with. I say that as well. Plan sides, plan starters. Have extras alongside it. Because it's then you know they're going to get something in. And I love the idea of the sporadic pudding.
Yeah, so it's at random. So she didn't know. It was, although we do have a menu, but she can't read. She's two. But, you know, it said yogurt. And so I just brought it out at the end. So I knew she's eaten. You know, her tummy has some goodness in it. She's okay. I didn't force. I didn't say try it with a spoon. She didn't want to. She had a spoon. But I think that's the kind of random bit means that puddings happen, but they don't happen as like a special thing.
Yeah, yeah, I love that sporadicness. Really
and
do.
At the weekend, if we've got a free moment and I fancy baking, or my 6 year, we'll bake something and we'll eat it and we share it. And I think the way that we also do it is we enjoy it together. You know, it's not like, I don't know, it's not like a reward for something. Yeah. It's something that we're actually enjoying. Like, oh, we baked brownies, or aren't they delicious? And we'll talk about how delicious they are, but they're not on a pedestal.
Above everything else.
I mean, yes, last night I was yumming at my lentil soup.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's about how I'm experiencing food, any kind of food, different
And allowing
times.
Them to have their own experience of it as well. Because I think that's what I find really hard sometimes to articulate, is that that's exactly what we want to do. We're not hierarchying any food. We're saying, like, right now I really fancy a lasagna, or right now this lentil soup is what I need.
Yes.
And if you can model that to your children, and then it might be that when you're eating a chocolate brownie, oh, this chocolate brownie is really delicious, this is filling my cup now.
Yeah.
You know, that can be any food. And rather than it being all the time, like, if you do this, you will get a reward, and that reward will be food. If you finish this meal, I will give you the reward of pudding.
I think that's the problem.
That is the problem.
Because that puts the pudding, the chocolate, the,
above everything
above
else.
Above everything else. Mm. Like, I will, this is true, sometimes I've got a little bit of chocolate. So I'm a dark chocolate lover, but my little ones, she's only two anyway, but she's allergic to milk. So, you know, chocolate, loads of things. She can't eat them anyway. Mm. But I don't want them to be like these really special things for her, because she can't eat them, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I will try and find things that she can eat. Mm. And every now and again with their snack, which might be fruit, it might be veg, because I properly randomise stuff.
Yeah, yeah, I love that.
I found
that.
These tiny little chocolate chips that are just dark chocolate, no milk in them, and I will throw them in. Mm. You know, they're tiny.
Yeah.
I'll also sometimes throw them in their porridge in the morning, and then and it's like, oh, there's chocolate in it today.
But like you said, it's completely random.
Yeah.
And it's not like that is going to then happen every day.
Yeah.
But it's also not like that's something that you've said, oh, that was a really special time. We don't have that often.
Exactly.
You know, it's none of that. It's just
it's also
like,
not bad.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm like, do you enjoy that chocolate? Yeah, it's yummy, isn't it?
Mm.
End of.
Yeah. But
she's
the same you might say
that
when you then throw some frozen berries in, and they're like, oh, these frozen berries with this yogurt is really nice. You know, I think it's just, for me, it's different foods for different occasions. It's not saying that anything is better than the other. And it's just really strongly trying not to praise with food or reward with food, because it's always going to be the same. And also, society is already doing that job for us. Like,
absolutely.
When the kids come out of school, they always come out with a packet of sweets, you know, when it's someone's birthday. When it's, you know, when it's a birthday party, or when it's Christmas time, which is something we've talked about.
I just don't care.
It's exactly,
eat what
we
you
just
want.
Have to let it go. But
let
what's
go.
Happening at home day to day, day in, day out, is that we aren't hierarching those food. We, you know, my son has done this so well, and I'm still working on Ada, who is six. I'm still working on her, but he loves food. And like you said about lentil soup, I remember us taking him to Italy, and we were just randomly in the back streets. You know when you're trying to find a restaurant and you're like, and we ended up finding like a lentil soup, and I was like, he's never had this before. And he did exactly what you said, absolutely nailed it. And I was thinking, that is crazy. But he just loves food. So he didn't ever get down from the table. He didn't ever, because he's like, I want to eat this food. And he doesn't care what it is. Like, when we were on holiday, he dipped broccoli in ice cream, and he's like sucking the ice cream off of the broccoli. He just loves food, and he knows what he wants when he wants. Mm-hmm. And sometimes he'll have a bit of a cake and he'll go, I don't want that, Mum. Which is so, and my daughter is not the same.
So my daughter
she is work
like
in progress.
Yeah. She went through a fussy phase. So I guess also, like, it's very normal for two-year-olds to go through a fussy phase.
Absolutely.
It's actually biological. It's called neophobia.
Yeah.
But they grow out of it if you allow it. And by allow it, I mean keep serving, give them exposure to stuff, you know, without pressure to eat.
Familiar,
my two-year-old walks around the greengrocer and picks fruit and veg, and I make her touch it. Oh, we're having some, you know, she picked potatoes the other day, and we bought tons because she was enjoying the game. But, you know,
you're like, you touched it now. It's got to go in the basket.
But she loves it, and it's just exposure. Mm. And so it's familiarity. Yeah. And over time, she will eat it, because I did the same with my six-year-old, and she will.
Exactly.
The thing to say is, I know some kids, like some adults too, are more sweet toothed, right? Mm. The sweet is what really gets them. And for me, those kids, I would say, just sprinkle it more. Just give them that sprinkling.
Without it being a big deal.
Without it being a big deal. Mm. So actually, if you do pick them up after school and you're like, my kid will want something sweet, add something sweet, but give them something that isn't. Mm. Like, honestly, I will serve, especially around Christmas, you know, with advent calendars and things. When my daughter opens a chocolate, she saves it and says, bring it to me after school. But she might get it with some carrot sticks. But she'll get it.
Love that.
I'm not taking it away from her. She's allowed the chocolate. There's nothing wrong with it. Or she can have it with breakfast, but she often likes the, I want to save it for after.
So but again, different personalities.
I often, in summer, I often served strawberries with cherry tomatoes because my six-year-old, when she was younger, just could not get into cherry tomatoes. Everything's red, so have a mix. You don't have to eat them, but you're just seeing them, looking at them, picking them, you know, all that kind of stuff. She would be like, oh no, I still don't like it. Yeah. Like, that's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Another day, right? So, but I think if your kid is sweet toothed, sprinkle it in. Mm. Like instead of being like, we avoid it even more.
Yeah.
Because I hear many times my parents say, but if I give them a yogurt with their meal, they will eat the yogurt first. Mm. And I'm like, that's okay. I don't know what the problem is. And then they'll say, but they won't eat anything else. I'm like, maybe they won't eat anything else. So if that's the case, don't give them a full yogurt.
Yeah, exactly.
Spoon it out, which is what I would always do. Spoon a little bit out in a bowl. Give them like slightly less. But if they eat that first, as a psychologist, I can tell you for sure, that opens up their appetite. Mm. It doesn't matter what your kid eats. I've worked with kids who have really restrictive eating behaviors. And the way to help them eat was to give them something they wanted so that their stomach relaxes. As soon as your child eats, your stomach does its job, but it starts to relax. And that opens the appetite to eating something else. So it's not a bad thing.
And also, like you said, with regards to the sprinkling of stuff, if you are, if that food is on a pedestal, so if that food is restricted, then yes, when you offer it to them at the mealtime, let's say, for example, you know, my kids, when they used to come home from nursery and they'd sometimes bring a cake home that was a birthday thing again, and it would be, well, we'll just have that with our mealtime. And for loads of families, they'd say to me, but my toddler would just eat the cake and then say they didn't want anything else. And I totally get that because my daughter had a much lower appetite.
Yes.
But that's often because that food is very, very sparse in their diet, that they aren't allowed to have it kind of ad lib on occasions.
But also, you know, be the authoritative bit. Let's go back to that. You know, build your boundary. I love that boundary. We're having it with our meal. If that works for you, roll with it. For some kids, they might have a massive tantrum, right? Like, I want to eat it now. Use your parental authority because you have it. And I trust
parents. And you're allowed to use it. Yeah.
You're allowed to use it. If you're like, no, you know, I know what, like a cupcake size. Yeah. No, if I ever give you this now, forget it. Dinner is ruined.
Exactly. Right? Yes. Yep.
Give them a quarter.
That's your boundary.
Cut it up. Mm. But cut it up and say you can have a quarter now and you can have the rest with your meal, or you can have another little. And when you say the rest, you just cut it up. Give them a little piece with the rest of the meal. Like, you know, use your logic, your sense of your child.
Because only your own knowledge. Yeah, of course.
My daughter went through a phase where I couldn't give her snacks. Because if she got a snack, she would not eat her meal. But what I tried to do was give her things that were snacky as part of her meal. That this was new to me. I'd never done this before. I tried it and it worked for us. Don't know if it would work for other people. But, you know, like instead of giving them crisps or giving them, you know, the packaged biscuits or whatever, I would take a few and I would put them in her meal. So that's sprinkling, right?
Yeah, exactly.
She got a few crisps with her full dinner. But it wasn't the snack and then the dinner.
And I think if for parents who aren't used to having it in that way, that, you know, having it all together, those children will go, oh my gosh, there's chocolate with my dinner. I'm going to eat the chocolate first. Fine. I'm not going to think about it. But it's about that becoming the norm. Like, what is the norm? And like you say, if you're sprinkling in, it becomes less scarce. So they're not thinking, this I don't have very often, so I'm going to absolutely max out on it right now. And also then when they realize that that is the norm, that it's okay for them to eat that, and like the yogurt,
and it's
you
okay
said
to
in
eat
that
it
example
first.
It's okay
our
to
stomach
eat
doesn't
first.
Care
yeah.
It just mixes everything together.
Exactly.
Honestly, I know there's lots of chat, there's this big narrative about when to eat sugar with your carbs and blah blah blah. Honestly, as somebody who worked in type 1 diabetes for 8 years of my life with kids who, you know, actually need sugar, because that's a myth about kids with type 1 diabetes not eating it, but they do need to think about what they eat so that they get the right type right amount of insulin into their bodies, it just gets mixed up. Mm. Your body doesn't process the chocolate differently if they eat it first or if they eat it last. Mm. It just will process the sugar. Mm. So it's okay. Mm. Like, just, I don't mind when they eat it.
Yeah,
I mind that they don't see it as special anymore. Yeah. And, oh, you know, some kids over time will see the chocolate and be like, I'll save it.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
that's the
again,
special bit.
Yeah, different personalities.
Different
yeah.
personalities. Some kids won't. They'll go for the chocolate first.
Yeah, exactly.
Honestly, I know people who will always go for the chocolate first. You know, like in a buffet.
Mm. They go to the,
they're adults and they'll go to the desserts. And then they work their way backwards. Mm. I mean, if that's who you are,
I think I honestly used to love watching Rafi. And again, it's very different with Ada, but I used to love watching Rafi because I would love him exploring his food. Like, he would quite literally would take a little bite of the cake and then he'll go and he'll eat a bit of lasagna. And then he'll be munching on a salad leaf and then he'll go back to the cake. And that is so unusual for us as adults.
It's so
but
unusual.
I think it's so okay to let them have their own autonomy. And and what they're doing in those moments, like what Raph's doing, is quite literally eating to his own appetite, following what he wants. He's not following a preconceived idea of the order that in which he should eat things. So it's like, do as you want.
Yes.
And like I say, it becomes less sort of novelty after a while if you're doing this kind of like pudding alongside the main. And for us, it was a boundary because I know if Ada eats a cupcake in the car on the way home or in the pram on the way home or whatever from nursery, she would not have an appetite for mealtime. And she was so hard to keep at the table anyway. Mm. She constantly wanted to get down. She has a really tiny appetite. Mm. So for me, the boundary was, no, that's fine. You can have it, but we'll have it at mealtime. Because I know she will then tap into both and she'll get a variety rather than just a cupcake. So totally think that, and it is all about working out your child. But I think, trying these different things, I think what we're saying here is like, having your own boundary, not labeling, allowing that kind of getting rid of that food hierarchy, allowing them to eat to appetite, being consistent with it. And I really love how you say, like, you be the parent. You get to decide.
Yeah, you get to decide. Like, my daughters often say, snack. Mm. Especially my six-year-old. After school, she's famished. And now she eats really well her dinner.
Mm.
I'm happy to give her a snack. But she will always ask for a snack. So now I've just made it part of her routine.
Yeah.
But again, this works for me and it doesn't work all the time. Like if we're in the car and they need a snack, I will, you know, I call them emergency snacks like that we have in our car.
Yeah.
And I will throw a bag of something and it's something that I approve of.
Mm.
I'm okay with them eating it or a bar, like some kind of, and I'll give it to them and I'm happy. But a lot of the time I will unpackage everything because I think kids also like with what the word snack means.
Yeah.
So again, we're talking about language, but I call a snack like some cheese on crackers. Mm. Like I can call a snack some like, you know, mini sausages with something.
Yeah.
You know,
an egg and some toast. Yeah, fingers. Like,
exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
A snack can be anything. It could be fruit with something. It could be veg. It could be. So I'm not associating snack with just the packaged stuff.
Yeah.
And I think, again, that really helps because it helps you. Well, it helped me as a parent feel I get to give you the snack I want.
Mm.
But it also helps kids like their brain expands
from
the idea that the crisps, the biscuits, those are the snacks.
Mm.
Nothing else is. Mm. Like, no, it's all food.
Yeah.
And anything can be a snack and anything can be shared at mealtime. Mm. And I think that also disempowers the snack when parents get really irritated that their kids only want the
snacks,
the packaged stuff.
Yeah. And I think, again, going back to those boundaries, having boundaries around snack time and meal times really helps.
Yeah.
Helps you as a parent to be consistent. It also helps them to regulate their appetite too. So, but on the note that we're talking about, you just kind of moved to talk about a bit more fussy and mealtime environment. Now that's something you and I have spoken about quite a lot is mealtime environments. And I feel really strongly about mealtime environments being such an important place for children to learn and to have this like really healthy relationship with food.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Like the atmosphere around mealtimes. What can we do, again, from like a psychological perspective? Mm. What are those mealtimes doing if we're giving them the positive environment at food times?
So the science of mealtimes is based on how our tummies and our bodies kind of respond around the table. So again, low pressure.
Yeah.
So what I mean by low pressure is the more fun you make it, the more relaxed you make it, the more enjoyable you make it, the more your tummy eats. Mm. And this is true. So there's a reason why we all eat too much at Christmas. And it's not just that it's a roast.
Yeah.
Or like whatever, you know, foods that you're like, these are special. It's because we're sat around the table with our family and we're enjoying, often, hopefully, enjoying conversation. You know, it's got that festive atmosphere. Now, you don't have to bring that festive atmosphere every day. But I think making mealtimes enjoyable has been proved to help children eat more, to help children explore, because they're more relaxed.
That's when you're going to do that.
But also it's been shown like that when you have family mealtimes as a family and you do all eat together and enjoy that moment together, it can help kids feel more bonded to their parents. So your relationship with your kids gets better. Mm-hmm. It opens up dialogue, conversations around the table, and those conversations can often help kids like forward anyway. They might open up about school. They might tell you something you've never heard because they're relaxed.
They also might learn something from your conversation as well. Like
So I think, how do you set them up? I try and set them up as relaxed as possible. So like one, we all help out setting the table. My 2-year-old brings the cutlery. My 6-year-old does the mats and, you know, they both do that. They've been doing that since they were, you know, she's 2 and she's already, you know, opening the drawers, doing it herself. Often my 6-year-old helps with dishing out dinner now or bringing the plates to the table. We all sit and we all talk. No phones, no screens. We avoid that as a family because we can and because, you know, they can interfere in like your kids being able to listen to their body's cues around me, but also they're a form of distraction. So you're not focusing on each other or the food, you're focusing on something else, which pulls away from all those good benefits of eating together. And then we chat and we try and make it fun. We talk about our day. Me and my husband talk about our day. We sometimes talk about silly things or something funny we've seen or heard or whatever. We play with our food. So my 2-year-old doesn't like peas and neither did my 6-year-old. So we play this game. And I know some adults will say, you don't play games at the table. I'm like, I do. Like I put the pea on my lips like this and then I blow it up like I would with a Malteser. Yeah, I don't know if anybody's ever played that Malteser.
I've not done it with a pea.
It works. But also I put it here because she's really little so she can't blow. So I put it here and I just suck it in and she wants to do it.
Yeah.
She's like, this is fun. But again, she sometimes goes, no, thank you. Mm. Like she doesn't, and I'm okay with that. Mm. But again, it's building familiarity.
Completely.
It's creating fun.
Around the food.
Around the food.
And relax. Like,
so rather than going,
the relaxed environment
peas,
matters so much.
I don't want to eat them. She's now like, oh, peas, we get play with them. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Because eventually she will eat them.
Mm. I mean, something you just mentioned as well that you've quite literally written the book on. Actually, tell us a little bit about your book. And also, can you, I guess, tell us, what have you talked about in the book really that relates to like screens at mealtimes? Because that is a really tough question for parents. And I know a lot of parents don't like having this conversation.
I know. I think it's quite a confronting conversation.
Yes.
So my book is called The Smartphone Solution. It doesn't just talk about smartphones. It talks about screens.
Yeah.
And I give you the science of it. But I mean, this might be a boring answer, but...
Never.
There's a few things we know about screens and food. So one, it mutes like our body signals. So kids lose the ability to think about their hunger cues. And you know this, like at a cinema, if you've ever ordered popcorn, I'm always like, it's too much popcorn. And then I sit there and I eat it all because you forget.
Of course.
You know, and I would never
it's
eat
mindless
that much popcorn.
Eating. Yeah.
If I was just sat eating popcorn, I wouldn't be eating all of that.
Yeah.
But because I'm watching a film, it's mindless eating, correct?
Exactly.
So for some parents, they will say, but it's good because it helps my child eat more. The problem with it is, one, it stops them being able to say, when am I full? Which is really important. We don't want kids overeating as much as we don't want them undereating.
Yeah, of course.
But overeating can become a problem as they get older because the more you mute that signal from your stomach, the more your brain kind of switches off, the easier it is to do long term. But two, they're not paying attention to what they're eating. And that's not good when it comes to like food exploration, when it comes to like
familiarity,
your brain is kind of, when we look at a screen, our brains go semi-dormant. So it's a bit like daydreaming, but you're awake. But what it means is if you're switched off to what your body needs.
Yep.
Because, you know, good TV will do this to you. And it's good when it's a film. That's good. Like, it's an entertainment. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not bad necessarily, but it can affect your kids over time in terms of not being able to listen to their body cues.
Yeah, absolutely.
Same with like wetting or toileting. Mm. You're actually just teaching your kids to mute that. Mm. So that's not great. The other thing to say about screens is they might be useful sometimes. Mm-hmm. So, and I talk about this in my book because there's science around it and it is important. I think if your kid is neurodivergent and they've got a diagnosis, when you take them on holiday, when you take them to a restaurant, which by the way, you're allowed to do, you're allowed to go for a nice meal at a restaurant with your kids. If you, you know, the screen helps them kind of feel calmer because it's familiarity. So sometimes having the screen out like in a restaurant will help kids feel like I can relax and then that will allow
that
them to
appetite.
Eat.
Yeah.
The way that I would do it is allow them the screen before the food comes, then take it away. And then when they're fully done, give it back. And it's the same in your house, right? You can still say you can have the screen, but maybe you have it before the meal, after the meal. You know, you choose.
Right in the
But maybe not right in the middle of the meal because that's doing something that isn't so healthy or helpful to our bodies.
Especially in the long run as well. Yeah. And it is really easy to get in that habit, isn't it? Of needing, having it as like a crutch that you have to...
I think
you
as a parent, it's really,
to eat.
Yeah, because I think screens keep our kids quiet. And like, as a mum, I get this. Like, I go to a restaurant and people will say, but it's not enjoyable in a restaurant. And I'm like, I mean, maybe it's my view on it, but if I really want to enjoy a meal at a restaurant, I don't take my kids.
If you want to sit and have an adult jolly conversation.
I'm not taking my kids. Like, we are planning this outside of kid time.
Fact.
But if I bring my kids, which I do, I've been taking my kids to restaurants and pubs.
Yeah, we do
not
too,
all the time, but when I do. But I do it. I do it because I want them to learn. Again, it's that experience of teach your kids how to sit at the table and blah, blah, blah. But I take pens, I take toys, I take little cards and we all play together and we draw. And we use it as a, we're connecting and then we're having a meal and I will choose a child-friendly place because when my two-year-old wants to run around, one of us will hold her hand and not run around, but we walk around. We let her explore the restaurant and look around and then, you know, I'm coming. She's coming back to have a bit more. She comes back and sits and has a bit more. But we allow it. So we'll go to a family-friendly pub or, you know, somewhere with an outdoor space where she can run
off.
But I'm not sitting there having a very meaningful conversation with my husband. Like,
and
my
thinking,
friend.
Oh, how lovely this is. And no, my third glass of wine.
It's not that. It's like that knowledge of, for me, the win in those situations with my kids is I don't have to cook or do the washing up and I'm still eating something I'm enjoying. That's my win. It's not the conversation. So I think while your kids are small, you need to think, when do I get this and how do I set my boundary around it? And when I take my kids, what does that look like? Because, you know, layer your expectations.
It's going to be a different,
completely. It's a different.
And I actually think sometimes with feeding kids, we do need to lower our expectations a lot because mealtimes are chaotic. And, you know, we've talked about that. But so this has honestly been so amazing. I just want to ask you a couple of questions to round up now, if that's okay. So what do you think are some of the most powerful things that parents can do to help their children grow up with a positive relationship with food, let's say? What, just some really kind of top line key things that parents can do?
Think of all food just as food and mind your language. Like, be really mindful about the language you use. All kids are fussy sometimes. You know, if you want your kid to become a food explorer, as I call them, you need to just let go the pressure of trying foods. Just keep offering with no pressure to eat. Keep exposing to the sounds, the smells, the looks of food by you eating it. Like, that's exposure enough. With my two-year-old, I always think if she sees me enjoy it, at some point she will want to try it.
Yeah.
Because they do. They want to do what we do.
Oh, completely.
So just, I mean, that's what I would do. Just simply, just bring bring food and bring the fun around it as much as you can. We call broccoli mini trees and we try and find the babiest tree and chop its head off.
The smallest one. Oh.
But the smallest,
that
the
sounds
reason.
Sounds evil.
But we do the smallest one because that's, I know my little one is more likely to go for the smallest one than the, she's not going to go for the big one. She doesn't want to touch it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But she will eat the littlest broccoli. And I'm like, you know, tick.
Yeah.
Done.
That's a tick. Yeah. We don't need to. So yeah, I love that. And then the last thing, if you wanted to give parents one takeaway, and I know you've probably said so many tips and bits of advice throughout this, but if you were going to give parents one takeaway for those calmed meal times, what would you be telling them to do? One thing.
Oh, I think try and be calm yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because your kids will absorb.
Regulate you first, yeah.
Yeah, your kids do absorb how you show up at the table.
Yeah.
So if you're rushing and stressed, and by the way, that's normal.
I was literally just going to say the same thing. Like, that's
But what
times.
I tend to do is then, once the table's down, the kids are sat, the plates are gone, I go back in the kitchen all by myself. I do
have
this.
Have a breather.
Have a breather, have a glass of water and go, I'm going to enjoy my food.
Yeah.
Like, literally go with that mindset. I'm going to enjoy my food. It's okay if my kid does not. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Give your kid permission not to enjoy their food, but give yourself permission to enjoy whatever you've made.
Because actually you will teach them so much more from that than from you saying, no, you have to eat this, and arguing with them and making that mealtime a battle. You will teach them so much more by going, whatever you do is fine. I'm really hungry. I really want to enjoy my meal.
And
they
enjoy
will
it.
Pick up so much more
like
from that.
Like almond, almond, whatever you want. Like,
or this, you know, this lasagna is so good.
Some
I always
people
say lasagna
like that,
I love
but
lasagna.
You know,
yeah.
Eat. Like, just eat. Don't worry too much about the food in front of your kids.
Absolutely.
Don't be like, what are you having? What are you eating? How much? No, forget it.
Just have that more
focus
bit.
On your
completely.
Food. And the way I do it sometimes is, imagine you're sat with a friend rather than your kids.
Yeah.
You don't tend to like stare at the plate and what have you eaten? You
tell
don't
them
do that
to
your friend.
Exactly.
You just chat and you enjoy yours and you go, oh my God, this is so good. Do you want to try some? Do that. You know, like, I think that's the best thing you can do. Like, really embody that sense of enjoyment around your meal.
Loving food, yeah.
And the rest will flow.
I always say to parents on my fasted eating course, I talk a lot about imagining you're in the scenario as a restaurant, and how would you feel if you were in a restaurant and somebody was saying to you, but you haven't finished that part of the meal, or but you must eat that, or
try it.
Yeah, just give it a go. But you liked this when you came here last time. Why aren't you liking it now? You know, you didn't choose what was put in front of you. So if someone's put it in front of you and said, no, you ate that last time, you are going to eat it right now, how would you feel? You would not go back to that restaurant.
No.
You would not go back with these people sitting at the table with you. They were picking apart your meal and giving so much attention to you. You would go back if it was relaxed. You would go back if you were allowed to eat as you want to and have the conversation that you want to and get down when you want to go for
absolutely.
A wee or talk to somebody that you've seen over the other side of the restaurant. You'd go back to that. So just imagine that scenario next time you were eating with the kids.
100%. And it goes back to that authoritative bit, right?
Yeah.
Boundaries.
Yeah.
Firm, but with love, like allow
exactly.
your kids to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. This has been so, so brilliant. And I mean, I could talk to you all day. Quite literally, I could be here all day. And I only got through half my questions, but we have to finish there. And that was so brilliant. And I'm so grateful for you coming along. Thank you. And I hope it was useful for you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was lovely.
Amazing. Thank you so much to Dr. Marta for joining me today and for sharing her insights into the psychology of mealtimes and how to make mealtimes less stressful. If you enjoyed today's episode, please do subscribe, share it with a friend, or leave a quick review, as it honestly does make a really big difference. This podcast is brought to you with support from Little Dish, so a big thank you to them for hosting us in their headquarters as well. And finally, stay tuned for our next episode of How to Feed with Charlotte Sterling Mead. This episode of How to Feed wouldn't have been possible without my sponsors, Little Dish. Their meals are fresh, delicious, and made with ingredients that you would find in your own kitchen, making them a brilliant option for busy days.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got you covered with comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting and confident looks you can count on. For over a decade, Mack Weldon has designed timeless, innovative menswear to help you move through the day with confidence. not flashy, just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code MACK25.